Our first case is case number 72716, Shores v. Global Experience Specialists, Inc. Mr. Jones for the appellant, Mr. Malley for the respondent. Mr. Jones.
Thank you and good morning. And may it please the court, Mark Jones on behalf of the appellant Landon Shores, and this is Mr. Shores. Oh, and let me state up front as well, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes of time for
you. Okay, I'll keep an eye on the clock for you.
Thank you, Your Honor. And this is his appeal from a preliminary injunction order enjoining Mr. Shores from employment in his chosen field anywhere in the United States and the entire country for a one-year time period. And I'd like to start by saying that we know from established Nevada law that a non-compete covenants and agreements, which I may please refer to as NCAs hereout, are subject to increased scrutiny under the law. Further, that as restraints of trade, NCAs will not be enforced unless reasonable. Also, that respondent Global Experience Specialists, Inc., if I may hereafter, GES, had the burden to establish entitlement to the preliminary injunction. And further, importantly, in reviewing the lower court's denial of a preliminary injunction in the Canco versus Baker case, this court held that in determining whether an employer enjoyed a reasonable probability of success on the merits of its case, the court must consider whether the provisions of the non-competition agreement would likely be found reasonable at trial. And we submit that the territorial scope of the subject non-competition agreement is inherently unreasonable. After providing no evidence in its motion to satisfy its burden that the NCA was reasonable in territorial scope, with its reply, the respondent submitted an approximate previous 12-month list for all convention and trade shows at which it offered its services and a table of locations for those events. And pursuant to the NCA Section 1.6A, the 12-month time period was important because it was within 12 months of his departure that it was supposed to be. We were looking at to see what he could not do in competition. And this leads to our main contention in this appeal that the lower court erred by citing the wrong legal standard by completely ignoring the on-point holdings and directives of the seminal Nevada case on territorial considerations for NCA analysis, and that is the 1997 Canco versus Baker case. And I'd like to read specifically from the conclusions of law with regard to this legal error. Conclusion of law number 22, in part, says the nationwide geographic scope of the covenant not to compete contained in the agreement is also reasonable. This is the lower court's finding. The court disagrees with Shores that a nationwide restriction on employment is unreasonable as a matter of law. Rather, a nationwide restriction is reasonable if it is justified by the nationwide nature of the employer's business. Thereafter, the lower court cites to 8 different cases from all over the country that support that conclusion of law. It goes on to section 23 of the conclusions of law. Here, a nationwide restriction is reasonable based on the nationwide nature of GES's respondent's business, as well as the work Shores performed for GES with respect to events and locations across the country.
Mr. Jones, is my review of the record accurate in as much as it appears that the trial court simply accepted a 33-state contact assertion as the basis for that nationwide breadth?
That is correct, Your Honor, exactly in line with the nature of the business. And we cited to a lot of cases that says, for instance, one of the cases said that 7 states is sufficient to supply a nationwide basis for the restriction to validate. The point that I want to make and the reason for our appeal is that, and our main contention is, that the lower court erred by citing the wrong legal standard and completely ignoring, again, the CAMCO case. Black letter law, we would submit, in CAMCO provides in Nevada for a non-competition clause to be reasonable. The employer must have established customer contacts and goodwill established in the territory in which it seeks to prevent the employee from working. So that is the difference of what happened in the lower court's conclusion of law, which we say is unreasonable as a matter of it's a wrong legal standard. And in fact, the other side, the respondents, cited in their original motion for preliminary injunction the CAMCO holding. We adopt the view that to be reasonable, if the territorial restrictions should be limited to the territory in which former employers established customer contacts and goodwill.
Is Mr. Shores an educated man?
I don't know.
Can he read?
Education, Your Honor.
Can he read?
He is a, I'm sorry?
Can he read?
Yes, sir.
And when he signed this agreement, did he know what he was signing?
Your Honor, we would submit that is not, yes, he knew. He understood what he was signing, but he had an unequal bargaining power. He knew, and that's the whole point of, if that was the case, if that was the case that and a problem for us, then there would be no non-competition agreement cases in Nevada. There would be no, because you could be, an employer would put whatever he wants into there. And that would be what his position was. He had a salary increase, he needed his salary, and he had an unequal bargaining power. And I believe that the Golden Road case also states that is something that the court acknowledges.
Was Judge Denton that heard this case in the lower court?
Judge, I apologize.
Was it Judge Denton that heard this case?
It was, Your Honor.
Was there any talk about what this man would do to make a living during this period of time?
There was talk, yes, and that is one of their positions, that Mr. Shores could do anything. He could work as an accountant. He could work as a janitor. But that's not, again, we would submit that that's a reasonable to the analysis of the as to the likelihood of success on the merits. For establishing that a non-competition agreement is reasonable for purposes of a preliminary injunction hearing.
Mr. Jones, that's my concern. The last sentence that you just offered in response to Judge Scherer's question, I'm not sure that I saw analysis below that dealt with the likelihood of success on the merits to the extent that we can look to a record and see that all of the prongs for preliminary injunction were considered. Is that something we need to be concerned about?
Your Honor, the way that it came down was they didn't have anything in their motion. They didn't have any evidence whatsoever as to the reasonableness. We pointed out that deficiency in the opposition. We did not even get a chance to file a reply based upon the timing. They submitted with the reply their list of this evidence that showed the 119 cities that they were in. And I don't know if that specifically answers or completely answers your question or not.
I'm just not sure that the analysis of whether or not this NCA was reasonable was considered in full. That's my concern, because that has to be part of the analysis regarding reasonable likelihood of success.
Well, we would agree from the standpoint that it wasn't, when you say considered in full, we argued the CAMCO case. We did argue the CAMCO case. We argued the reasonableness. We indicated as a matter of law, as just Judge Denton pointed out in finding number 22, that we thought that as a matter of law it was not reasonable. And and they cited to the CAMCO case. And our point is that it's completely absent from any analysis as to the legal standard in Nevada. And it's very conspicuous. It was conspicuously absent is the word I would say. Here we have this findings of fact, conclusions of law. Both sides argued it, and all of a sudden we have no cites to CAMCO whatsoever, better for good or for worse. And the legal standard that was considered by the lower court were all of these other out-of-state cases.
What's the status of the record as far as it looks like the preliminary injunction are that the one-year period is passed?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And what would be left is the trial?
What would be left is there's a couple of things. The one-year time period is passed. There is another agreement that may or may not hinge upon the validity of the non-compete that has to be. There were different claims for relief. Furthermore, we'll go ahead. I'll stop there if that answers your question.
Not fully.
Yes, sir.
So he's employed now. He's got a job now.
He does have a job now.
In the same field?
Yes, sir. The Supreme Court issued a stay allowing him to, invalidating the preliminary injunction until the time of this court's decision. Now, if I may, I would submit that on that point, whether or not if you're indicating whether or not this is moot.
Exactly. That's the word I was looking for, yes.
Yes, if this is over, the answer is no, it is not. First, there are three things to that. First of all, there's been a lot of time and effort put into this, and my client very clearly feels that a wrong has and justice has been done and wants to understand for better or for worse what this court's decision is. Second, a lot has been put into motion. He was stayed from pursuing his job for a certain period of time before the stay was lifted. There is also a bond in place now. There are considerations under the artistic hairdresser's case whether we can, assuming we win, we're going to argue that that case allows us attorney's fees under the bond.
Well, it's not moot because of the stay. So there's still some time that he would be prohibited from working in this area.
But potentially, or I don't know how that's going to turn, but potentially, Your Honor, that is correct. That's the fourth reason.
You have 3 minutes and 35 seconds left. You want to reserve your time, Mr. Jones?
Appreciate it, Your Honor.
For rebuttal?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Miller, I got the first question for you, which would be, I taught business law at the University of Phoenix. And one of the cases I used was the case that Mr. Jones was talking about. And the magic words were limited in time and space. How do you explain how this is not limited in time and space?
Well, I mean,
time is okay. I mean, a year, I still think it's may be excessive. What about the space? Time of space.
So we have my client, Global Experience Specialists. May it please the court, David Malley.
Yeah, sure. Sorry to
that's quite all right.
Interrupt you like that. Go ahead.
The space, it is a nationwide scope. The agreement, both of the agreements talk about the national and international nature and contacts of my client, GES. There can be no question that there are businesses that operate nationwide throughout the country that no one would reasonably suggest is not nationwide.
Yours is not a nationwide business, right? There's 17 states that you don't have a presence in?
Well, Your Honor, thank you. What we have here is a preliminary injunction. Mm-hmm. The evidence presented thus far was of 33 states. And the premise that the state line is the determining factor, I don't think should be the standard in Nevada. That in order to have a nationwide presence, we have to be in all 50 states. If we were in 49 states but not Rhode Island, would we still be throughout the country? So that's really the question is, what it does throughout the country mean? We had the evidence presented thus far was of 119 different cities. Certainly at the trial, at which point the determination, which has not yet been made, but the determination of the ultimate issue, which is the reasonableness of the NCA. After discovery and at the trial, all those issues will be flushed out for the ultimate decision. At this point, however, the relief sought and the matter for determination here is whether the injunction was improvidently granted or not, not whether the covenant is enforceable based solely on the evidence presented here.
There's an issue with that. Doesn't part of that have to be considered by the judge in the preliminary injunction proceeding with respect to likelihood of success on the merits?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And the issue was not raised, and it was, if you look at their opening brief on page 18, footnote 1, If they argued, and they abandoned this argument, they say that this is not their argument. If they argued that it was unreasonable on its face, that a nationwide scope could not be enforced in Nevada, absolutely that would be a matter of law for the court down below and for this court. That is not what is being argued here. There's a recognition explicit by both the district court and by Mr. Shores that a nationwide nationwide territorial restriction could be enforceable in Nevada. The question here is whether, based on the evidence presented thus far, a preliminary injunction could properly be entered.
So could Mr. Shores work in one of the states without violating the NCA, where you do not have any contacts?
Well,
one of the 17?
That is, well, this court does have the ability under Hansen and
I'm asking you under the terms and conditions of your agreement.
Under the terms of the agreement, no. And under the terms of the injunction, no. Presently, could he? Yes.
Well, presently is a little different than what we're arguing, but
right.
Let me key on what she said. Could he be a convention banquet manager for MGM or Caesars?
A convention banquet manager. Yes.
And he could solicit all the people that he had solicited before for banquets at MGM properties and Caesars properties.
So, well, the solicitation issue I would have to look into. I think there are two different industries. But, yes, I believe in that circumstance he could. That's different from the trade show convention business. But I would like to, unless you have more questions on the...
Go ahead.
I would like to address the issue that was brought up about the mootness. Because right now, the relief sought is that Mr. Shore seeks to be relieved from the burden of the injunction. He is no longer burdened by that injunction. There's no relief that this court could grant him in this matter as regards the preliminary injunction, the matter which has been appealed. That was the case in the personhood v. Prison of Nevada versus Bristol. It was certainly the case in NCAA versus UNR, where we had the basketball player who wanted to play for UNR, and the NCAA tried to stop that. An injunction was granted that allowed him to play. He's since graduated. The injunction became moot. The issues on appeal, the underlying issues, the ultimate issue of the reasonableness of the nationwide geographic scope or the reasonableness of the matter still remain for trial, but the injunction became moot. This is also not a matter that's capable of repetition, yet evading review, because the issue here is simply based on the evidence presented at the preliminary injunction hearing on these facts in these circumstances. Again, there's no contention that it's as a matter of law on it's facially invalid. If that were the case, potentially it could be capable of repetition yet evading review.
So you're saying it's moot is your argument?
Yes.
Okay. Now, when it goes, what would happen in a district court then? Will we declare it's moot and you go back to district court and you try the case?
That's right.
And what are the issues?
The issues are whether there was a breach. At the end of the day, first the issue would be establishing the enforceability of the agreement, which are for all the reasons that Mr. Shores has argued here and we are arguing that have not yet been developed on a full record. The enforceability of the agreement, whether there's been a breach, whether we've suffered any damages. If the agreement is not enforceable and Mr. Shores was wrongfully enjoined for those 2 months prior to the entry of the stay by this court, has he been damaged such that his recovery on the bond should take place? All of those are issues left to be determined at trial. The question at this point of whether GES has a presence in only 33 states, a minimal presence in 16 of those 33 states, those are based on the preliminary evidence. At the preliminary injunction stage, it's not a full record. This court, the United States Supreme Court, has held that injunctions are often granted on less than complete records, on hasty evidence. While we do believe that the evidence presented does justify a nationwide geographic scope, if you look at a map, if you mapped out where all the different locations where we had, we would be scattered coast to coast, north to south, points in between, corner to corner, and it was only a snapshot in time of Mr. Shore's employment. Frankly, we were surprised when he argued we hadn't proved a nationwide presence. And if you hear him, Mr. Schwartz has never argued below or here that we don't have a nationwide presence. The only argument has been that we, at the preliminary injunction stage, didn't meet the burden of proof of establishing that, not that it doesn't actually exist or that a full trial on the merits wouldn't bear that out.
So if, let's say we find that nationwide, that we established in an opinion or an order that nationwide prohibition is appropriate. What about the time? 1 year? If you can't work for a year, that's a long time.
It is a long, well, it's certainly a long time.
As opposed to maybe 6 months or 3 months.
In other words, I know that some of my colleagues don't like to what they call blue line these agreements. That's the argument we have in conference. Oh, I don't want to blue line it, some of the colleagues will say. What do you think about us blue lining?
May I ask, Your Honor, whether you're talking about blue lining the
time? Time only.
Are you talking about blue lining the agreement or the injunction?
The time on the agreement.
On the agreement.
Yes, just the time on the agreement.
I think a 1 year is reasonable. It has generally been found to be reasonable. 2 years has seemed to be the upper limit in Nevada and elsewhere of any of these types of agreements when dealing with employees. I think 1 year is reasonable, especially when we consider that balanced it with the scope of the prohibition. He is not prohibited from working, in fact, for his present employer, Freeman, the direct competitor. It's and the injunction bears out those specific tasks that he is prohibited from doing during the course of his employment for the direct competitor. So I think 1 year is a burden. I don't think it's an undue burden. I think the fact that, as we see, Mr. Shores has been employed by that employer during this whole time, including the period of the injunction, shows that it hasn't been a burden for him. If the court were to restrict it down to 6 months at this point, obviously that I'm a little stuck because it comes back to the mootness issue because the period has already expired. I suppose the court could exercise some type of equitable power to grant GES an additional 7 months during the stay. I doubt that would be the decision of any member of the court. That would not render the injunction moot.
Just how do you make a prima facie showing that the NCA is reasonable, a nationwide NCA is reasonable, when you're not in all the states? You're not a nationwide business. How do you get over that? I appreciate that it's not the trial yet. More facts right. will be fleshed out. But it's your obligation also below and then the court's obligation to find reasonableness
right.
of this. So how do you, what evidence is in the record to support the reasonableness? Where's the evidence of the business, the contacts, and the depth of your business in any of these 33 states that you do exist in?
The depth of those
yeah.
contacts in any of the, well, we if we look out, especially in the state of California, for example, where Mr. Shores did move and has worked, there were, in that period of time of just 1 year, 280 different shows. Cities throughout California.
But actually, let me stop you. Let's go macro.
Right.
How do you show that a nation, that you've made a prima facie showing that a nationwide restriction is reasonable when you're not nationwide? Let's just start there.
If we start there, well, if the answer is, as Mr. Shores posits, that we had to conclusively establish a presence in all 50 states, a presence throughout each of those 50 states, and the nature and quality and contacts of those presence in each of the 50 states, and, as they argued, in every town, city, and mm-hmm. county in each of those 50 states, I'm not sure that there's any company that could do that.
Well, I don't know that has to go that far. You're not in 17. You're just not there. So how does a restriction that covers those 17 that you have no presence that restricts this individual from working in those 17, how is that not just on its face at that macro level
right.
an overbroad restriction?
Well, because I don't think the evidence will bear out that we're not in those 17.
Okay.
Certainly, at the preliminary injunction stage, evidence was not presented of a presence in those 17.
Okay.
But the conclusion that we're not is not a the only conclusion to be had. If we go back in time from the beginning of his employment, the evidence would show more states. Again, this was a quick turnaround on the preliminary injunction. That was the evidence that was presented. The district court found that to be sufficient. Now, whether Whether there has to be a standard set out, that has not been set out by this court or any court, as to what is the quality of the evidence and the quantum of the evidence to establish a nationwide scope at a preliminary injunction hearing.
But we don't have to get to quality. I mean, under CAMCO, if we look at CAMCO, which the district court didn't really focus on, we don't have to get to the quality of it. If the evidence at the preliminary hearing is that only you're only in 33 states, whether there's more that you haven't to be named later,
right.
How are we saying the 50's fine?
Well, because I don't think that the state lines are the determining factor. If you look at a map of those locations, those 118 to 119 cities that we did identify, it is all over the map.
Okay, but what if you were in 25 states? So he can't work in the other half of the United States? I mean, at what point, we're talking about a nationwide restriction. What about a worldwide restriction? Do you have to show some connection to these other places that he cannot work?
Well,
make it reasonable.
And I think that there are international agreements.
Sure.
And certainly there's companies that don't work in North Korea, things like that. And if that's the standard that held that, for example, we're talking beyond the realm of what we're talking here,
sure,
that there has to be a presence for an international in every country or for a national in every single state, there's probably only a handful or a couple of handful companies that could ever meet that.
Why don't we just limit the NCA to identifying those cities that you used? I think Justice Stiglitz's point is obvious. That is, does nationwide mean nationwide, or does it mean a bunch of cities across the country? So it sounds to me like it may be a bit overbroad.
Well, it depends on the definition of what throughout means.
You said nationwide.
Well, the agreement talks about recognizing that the customer contacts of GES are throughout the United States. That's where I get the word throughout from. And that was what was addressed in the briefs down below and here. You're right. If the determination is that a preliminary injunction, whether it's nationwide or whether it's restricted to a smaller area, prove at the preliminary injunction stage that of contacts throughout that entire area, I'm not sure that there could be a standard of proof. When we have a Clark County restriction, does that mean that for a business centered in Las Vegas, that they have to show every city, town, unincorporated area in the county? That's the question, really, that's left for determination. I'm out of time. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Miller. Mr. Jones, you have 3.5 minutes.
Point was first raised that the evidence may at trial be able to establish something further. It would submit that there's no way that they can, based upon first the fact that their customers, the nature of their business is not to have a salesperson chase convention owners somewhere. Those convention owners are in a certain city already. That's where they want to be. They want to be in Las Vegas. They want to. So that's wherever the city is where you're contracting, where someone like Mr. Shores is contracting for that particular business. There was a point again that the evidence. My point is that the evidence is what it is now. We would submit that this court's review is based upon what the record is at the lower court. And the record on the lower court stands on its own, or it does not. And is there a reasonable likelihood of success for the merits? We would submit that there was not, based upon the arguments we've made.
If you were writing the disposition in this matter favorable to Mr. Shores, what would you say in a opinion or order?
What I would say is that the lower court erred in determining that the standard for deciding whether there is a likelihood of success on the merits for the main point. The court looked to outside law and the wrong legal standard and completely ignored, or, you know, I would hopefully make this worded a little more eloquently, but that the CAMCO standard for the state of Nevada, the seminal case here, provides that the employer must have established customer contacts and goodwill in the territory in which it seeks to prevent the employee from working. One other point to that, Your Honor, one of our other, Justice, Chief Justice here, one of our other points to that is that a little different, a little way of twisting, the non-compete is unreasonable as a matter of law because its scope is broader than necessary to protect GES's legitimate business interests. That's the Golden Road case, and that's based upon and a culmination of all of the other cases that came before that basically say the same thing. They have no legitimate business interest in protecting that they can protect by having him work somewhere in one of the states where they do absolutely no business. It just does not exist. With regard to the point that you brought up, that this may go back to the district court, if it does, based upon the fact that they did not satisfy the likelihood of success in the merits, I would submit that instead of going to trial, what is probably going to happen is we're going to do some very, very pointed discovery. We're then going to file a motion for summary judgment on the fact that they are not going to be able to prove that they have any presence over than what they've already shown us. So that I'm just saying that that is what's going to happen in our mind, and I'm very, very confident we're going to get a summary judgment on that matter. Golden Road question came up as to whether or not we might blue line. I just want to remind the court under the Golden Road case, which is the standard for the standard for this analysis, is that the court cannot blue pencil. So that cannot happen under that case in CAMCO. If an agreement is invalid on it's unreasonable, and then the whole agreement is thrown out.
Time's up.
Thank you.
Well, the court thanks Mr. Malley and Mr. Jones for your fine arguments and your briefs in this matter, and your clients should be very satisfied that both of you were extremely prepared in this matter and answered our questions, both sides. So congratulations to both of you for a fine presentation to this panel.